like to welcome everybody to the September 22nd, 2008 meeting of the Mesa City Council. I'm Mayor Scott Smith, and as always, it's an honor and privilege for me to be before you and conduct this meeting this evening. We'll begin with an invocation by Reverend Paul Whitlock of the Desert Heritage Church, and he'll be followed by Scout Robert Upchurch from Troop 996 at Poulsen Junior High, leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance. If all could arise for both the invocation and the pledge. Thank you.
I invite you to pray with me. We pray for the city of Mesa and the surrounding area, O God, that the needs of all for food and shelter, work and justice and dignity might be met. We pray that the diverse people living here may join their efforts to seek the good for all. Minister to this city through the hands of your people as we feed the hungry and heal the sick and comfort the sorrowing. We thank you, O God, for the gift of leadership you have gathered here. Guide us as we meet together, that we might listen more than we speak, that we might think calmly and carefully, decide wisely and well. We ask, O God, that you bless the representatives we have elected. Grant that through their discussions and decisions we may solve our problems effectively and enhance the well-being of our city and our community and achieve together a fairer, more united Mesa. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. Thank you, Reverend Whitlock and Robert. Appreciate that. We'll now proceed with the mayor's welcome. First item on our agenda is to take action on consent agenda items. These will be read in by Kim.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening. All citizens are permitted and encouraged to speak on agenda items. If you're interested in speaking on an agenda item, please fill out a blue card in the back of the room and give it to the city clerk. When the council considers the item, you'll be called to the podium to provide your comments. Mayor and council members, these are the items on the consent agenda. All items listed with an asterisk will be considered as a group by the city council and will be enacted with one motion. There'll be no separate discussion of these items unless a council member or citizen requests, in which event the item will be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. If a citizen wants an item removed from the consent agenda, a blue card must be completed and given to the city clerk prior to the council's vote on the consent agenda. Item 2, approval of minutes from previous meetings as written. Item 5A, act on new restaurant license for Dela Cruz Bistro, 10 West Main Street. Item 5B, act on new restaurant license for Doobie Grill Cafe, 2909 South Dobson Road, suite number 21. Item 5C, act on new restaurant license for Red Koi Japanese Restaurant, 5221 South Power Road, suite number A, 104 and 105. Item 6A, act on contract for radio frequency identification project, hardware and software. This item is partially funded by state grant in aid and used book sale funds. Item 6B, act on 3-year supply contract for traffic control, sign material and signing imaging. Item 6C, act on contract for purchase and installation of 5 replacement storm water pumps. Item 6D, act on contract for purchase of 1 replacement ladder fire truck. This item is funded by fire bonds. Item 6E, act on 3-year supply contract for padlocks and keys. Item 6F, act on contract for purchase of steel refuse containers. This item is funded by the Solid Waste Enterprise funding source. Item 6D has been deleted. Item 6H, act on contract for purchase of GIS infrastructure hardware and software. This item is funded by the Utility Enterprise funding source. Item 6I, act on contract for Kingsborough Park Playground Renovations, 2311 East Holmes Avenue. This item is CDBG funded. Item 6J, act on contract for communication tower at Desert Well number 14 well site. Item 7A, item 7B, item 7C, and item 7D have been continued to the October 6th City Council meeting. Item 7E, introduce ordinance for October 6th, Z08-57, 6447 South Mountain Road for truck maintenance facility. Item 8A, act on resolution to vacate alley in the 1500 block of East 2nd Place. Item 8B, act on resolution to vacate alley west of North Horn Street between East 7th Street and East 7th Place. Item 8C, act on resolution to execute a land use license with the CAP for a natural gas pipeline. Item 8D has been deleted. Item 8E has been deleted. Item 8F, act on resolution to modify the city's designation of assured water supply. Item 9A, act on ordinance to amend Mesa City Code regarding traffic modifications. Item 9C, act on ordinance Z08-27, 8745 East Warner Road for a council use permit. Item 9D, act on ordinance Z08-47, 8200 East Baseline Road for a mixed-use residential development. This item is being referred back to the Planning and Zoning Board. Item 9A, act on subdivision plat 916 Commerce Center Condominiums, 916 East Baseline Road. Item 10B, act on subdivision plat Lantana at Mountain Bridge, 8711 East Mountain Bridge Drive. Mayor and council members, these were the items on the consent agenda.
Thank you, Kim. I think one of the items, 10A, was read in as 9A. It's 10A. But I don't know how you keep all of them straight at all, Kim, so thank you very much. Any council members wish to remove an item from the consent agenda? We have a request from a citizen present to speak on item 9D. So we will be removing 9D from the consent agenda. Ms. Crocker, are there any other requests from citizens present?
Mayor, no additional requests.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion. We have a motion from Councilmember Kavanaugh, a second by Councilmember Summers. Any discussion on the consent agenda? If not, please vote. The voting is 7-0 in the affirmative. The motion passes. The next item on the agenda is item 3A, public hearing on major general plan amendment. We'll now, GP Major 08-01 in District 6, we'll now call this hearing to open. We have several requests to speak from citizens present. We'll start with Ms. Kathleen Hebert. Ms. Hebert? When you come up, would you please state your name and address for the record? And following Ms. Hebert will be Charlie Deaton.
Good evening. My name's Kathy Hebert, 4177 South Cordia Court, Gold Canyon, Arizona, 85218. My name is Kathy Hebert. I'm a residential relocation specialist with Keller Williams Integrity First Realty. My business partner, Barb Drake, who also is a relocation specialist. We happened to hear about a presentation at our Keller Williams Partners meeting that presented the plans of the DMB GM Proving Ground project. Not only will this magnitude and quality project bring tax revenue to our East Valley cities, the general plan of this project coincides with our business plan to grow our business from a team of 2 to a team of 20 employees over the next 5 years. I accept and encourage the passing of the general plan of the DMGM Proving Ground and hope to see our dreams relocate families to the East Valley become a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hebert. Charlie Deaton, and following Mr. Deaton will be Ken Renbold.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm here, Charlie Deaton, representing the Mesa Chamber of Commerce, and I think you'd be surprised if I was here doing anything other than being in support of the DMB project, but particularly I'm supporting what is being changed in the way we do our general plan. The Chamber has been excited about how this is allowing us to be a little more flexible in dealing with developers, and if that's what it takes to bring about the kind of high-wage jobs we need, then I want to thank all of you and certainly the staff for making these changes possible. I don't need to say to any of you how excited we are about the potential that both the DMB project as well as the Levine project bring to the potential we have for the kind of jobs we've been looking for. This is an exciting time for us, and it's coming at a perfect time when our economy may not be the best, but our outlook can't be brighter. And for that, We urge your support of this general plan amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Deaton. Mr. Rimbold. And he'll be followed by Kathleen Donahoe.
Mayor Smith and council members, my name is Ken Rimbold, 15230 North 75th Street, Suite 1010, Scottsdale, Arizona. We are property owners of a piece of property across the street, across Ellsworth from DMB's property. We are excited about the opportunity of this going forward, have seen their plan, have reviewed it with their people and their various meetings they've had. And it is a plan, I think, that the city, with the coming of the Gateway, Williams Gateway Airport, and the way it's been progressing, this is exactly what this area needs. I would encourage you to vote in favor of this general plan amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Rimbaud. Ms. Kathleen Donahoe. And she'll be followed by Brian Hubbard.
Mayor, Scottsdale Planning Commission, I'm Kathleen Donahoe. This is the city council. Never mind, let me start over. I've been dropping everything on my way up here, and I'm in Mesa. Okay, let's start all over. I'm Kathleen Donahoe, neighborhood
Are you
consultant.
Sure?
I think so.
Okay, we want to make sure about that now.
I think I am. I represent DMB. I'm their neighborhood community outreach individual. I have a letter from Rock. Hopefully I can read that correctly. Arnett, who was unable to be here this evening. So the focus of the East Valley Partnership's work with the local communities, businesses, and community leaders over the past two decades has been on partnership and promotion of the growing East Valley. The changes we have witnessed and been a part of will shape the community for generations to come. Today, we have another tremendous opportunity to take a bold step forward in creating the future of the city of Mesa and positively impacting the region. For nearly 2 years, we have been working with the DMB team on the vision for the Mesa Proving Grounds, beginning with a long community process with East Valley leaders, the local business community, and neighbors in the area. They sought to create a vision for the 21st century. Their thoughtfulness and inclusive style brought countless stakeholders in to shape a new kind of opportunity for the Southeast Valley. DMB understands the regional significance of this property and the critical importance of our Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. I can't think of another developer that brought this level of research, strategic partners, and public involvement to the planning of a regional project. Their work with the local employees like Boeing and the leadership of the airport demonstrate their commitment to enhancing the current operations of the airport and supporting their expansion. Yesterday we heard, this was a week or two, this was dated September 4th. Yesterday we heard the first announcement about the development of the Mesa Proving Grounds. The induction of the Gaylord into the market and into Mesa marks an exciting new day in Mesa and the East Valley. This convention center and resort will be a catalyst for high quality growth, high quality employment for many years to come. The East Valley Partnership board and members are thrilled to support these efforts to bring new employers to this valley. The benefits to our regions will last for decades to come. I hope you will join us in supporting their efforts by recommending that the Mesa City Council rezone the property to a planned community district, PCD, and establish a community plan for a mixed-use community. Thank you for your work and commitment to the future of Mesa. Thanks, Rock Arnett, President and CEO, East Valley Partnership. I have another package of letters for your perusal, assuming I'm at the right place tonight.
You are, and tell Rocky fit right in the 3 minutes, so we appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Brian Hubbard.
My name is Brian Hubbard. I live at 2650 South Willowood in Mesa. I've been following this project for quite a while for DMB. I've gotten a lot of their meetings and stuff. I was also some years ago involved with the Part 150 noise study at the airport. I was a volunteer with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association and was invited to go and follow that. And so I'm kind of partial to the airport, being a pilot, and you know, airports are kind of, soft spot in my heart. So with that in mind, I fully support this DMB. It's very exciting. Their proposal and the land use and the hotel and everything, it is very exciting. I have kept in touch with the people at the airport, Lynn Cousy and Brian Sexton, and I talk with them off and on. They have expressed some concern with, the combination of the airport and DMB. As always, there's the noise issue. I lived in Southern California, and Orange County John Wayne Airport allowed a lot of development to come within their space, thus forcing them to limit the number of passengers they can have on their aircraft down to like 75% of capacity or something. I don't know the whole number. So and there's been some talk of protecting the airport and, up from the airport side and then working with the airport from DMB side. I think protecting the airport is still a valid point. I guess the solution is, I know there's notification out there for people who move into that area. I've signed two different ones, two different homes. In one case, it was on, there was like, five or six pages of little paragraphs of this sign here. We need to make sure that when people move into that area and they're in the notification area, that, in my opinion, it should be an 8.5 by 11, there's an airport nearby. Now, other than that, great project, great way to go for the city of Mesa. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. We have several other cards from citizens who did not wish to speak on the item. Ms. Barbara Drake is in support of the item. Mr. Thomas Whitley is also in support of the item. Tracy Whitley is in support of the item, of the amendment. Mr. Carl Cole is also in support of the item. And D. Bowles, also in support of the item. Are there any council members who wish to make comments during this public hearing portion? Any other requests from citizens' presence?
No additional requests, Mayor.
If none, then I'll declare the public hearing closed. We'll now move to item 3B, which is the action on the resolution for the amendment. Is applicant representative, Mr. Gramage?
Mayor, members of the council, for your record, my name is Grady Gamage Jr. My address is 502 South College in Tempe, and it's a pleasure to be here on behalf of DMB. As you know, this is a complicated case, and there are going to be lots of times we're coming to see you about various things. A number of those were later on the agenda this evening and have been continued. This is the first one. This is the first action we're asking you to take. And in many ways, candidly, it's sort of the least interesting. As I'll show you in a minute, there's not a lot of detail within the general plan amendment. But it is the one that forms the predicate to all the others. It is the one that sets us up for trying to accomplish the vision we've been talking to you about at the Mesa Proving Grounds. So tonight, we're only talking about the general plan. I have a presentation, which if we can switch to, I will do here. Okay. This is the site, as you all know it, and we've seen this a number of times in our public forums, which many of you have attended, in front of the Planning Commission. It's been on Channel 11 repeatedly in the past. This actually shows some of what's kind of ahead of what you're doing tonight, which is the street network and the multiple cores within the area. When we started this whole thing, we looked at the property we had, and this shows you the property owners involved here. We all talk about this as the DMB amendment, but there's really two other pieces. There's a piece that's owned by the County Flood Control District that is a flood control channel running through the property, and then there's the Arizona State Land piece, and Michelle Green is here from the Arizona State Land Department. We have the permission from the State Land Department to go through the general plan process and the zoning process on behalf of the State Land piece. So it is part of the general plan consideration as you're seeing it. It is not yet part of a zoning case. So the state land is a little bit different than the DMB property, which is the 3,200 acres of former General Motors Proving Ground property. We started out a long time ago exploring with the city with what was then called the Williams Gateway Airport, the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, and others, the vision for this area as a job magnet for Mesa and for the Southeast Valley. And we began asking ourselves, how do you get there? How do you accomplish that? And that's part of what underlies the whole process of the planning as we've gone through it and the general plan amendment. The idea is to make this a regional center, a center of distinction, a center in which urban kinds of things are going to happen. And so we began early on talking to the city about what had been its previous vision, which was kind of a big swath of industrial uses on the north part of this property, and saying, you know, we think we can do better than that. We think we can do more jobs, higher paying jobs, and jobs that can build at an earlier point in time. And that led to one of the phrases we've used a lot, and this Venn diagram. Remember when you learned the Venn diagrams? I think I was in fourth grade when we learned Venn diagrams and intersecting circles. 21st century desert urbanism has become kind of the moniker we've used to explain our vision for what can happen at the Proving Grounds. Couple of important things about that. One is it's urban. This is much more urban than the city's previous vision and previous general plan. That means more intensity, more density. It means offices predominantly as the employment center rather than industrial buildings. It means recognizing that the airport can become the center of what's variously but called an aerotropolis or a really significant urban core like the development that's taken place around places like John Wayne Airport. 21st century is another important component of this vision, and that's led us where we are in terms of both the general plan and the zoning you will see in the PCD. It is an attempt to create a zoning construct that is more flexible and more adaptable over time to the kinds of changes that we're going to see in the 21st century. So instead of like carving the property up into absolutely separated little niches of development that only 5,000 square foot lots can go in this area and only 6,000 square foot lots can go in this area, and there's some meaningful distinction between those, we're trying to achieve a more mixed use vision and a vision that's more flexible and more creative and more adaptable over time. Desert is because we live in a desert. That one you can get. That's an easy one. But it does have to do with what we're trying to do by way of sustainability in the other parts of this vision. This is a complicated chart, but a meaningful one in terms of how we think you get to a center of regional significance. And this chart, as much as anything else, is the real underpinning of how we've come to think differently about this than the original general plan. We think there's a couple of major components to making this happen. One is we began this process by saying that we thought there should be multiple urban cores within the site, that those cores should be much more intense and much more directly employment-focused, and that in order to achieve the kind of employment that we all want out of those cores, we needed two kinds of people to see this as an attractive place where they wanted to move and wanted to live. One of those kinds of people are corporate executives, people who make locational decisions for companies, people who have tended in the past to go farther north than this site that we want to attract down to this part of the valley. The second group of people we want to attract are the knowledge workers, the creative class in Richard Florida's terminology, people who will want to live in an area where they can live and work and recreate in close proximity. Clearly one of the major trends of the 21st century, even before gas got expensive as it is today. So this shows you our sort of thinking about how you get there. This also shows one of the other major components of the project that we identified at an early point in time, and that was our expectation that there was a significant possibility for major hospitality uses here. When we started out saying that, we didn't know how quickly that would develop. You all have since heard the announcement about the first phase of this project and how the hospitality will indeed be probably the first thing that happens on the entire site. This shows you the existing general plan land use designation. So now we're into the hardcore of what we're doing tonight. This is what we're changing, and it is those colors that you see on the map that had previously divided the site into residential, industrial, office and mixed-use employment, business park, and other kinds of specific uses with lines in between them. The expectation, I think, under this general plan was that then those colors, general plans are all about colors, that those colors would be translated into sort of comparable zoning districts as it would go forward from that point on. What we're suggesting is this, and this is why I say this is probably the least interesting part of this, because all we're doing is going from this to this. And this one just shows one designation on the whole thing. The designation is mixed-use community. That is what affords us the opportunity in the next phase of this approval to come in and ask for the PCD, Planned Community District, which gives us the greater flexibility and adaptability. We're going to spend a lot of time in subsequent hearings explaining to you how that flexibility and adaptability works, spend a lot of time on it with the Planning Commission, but this is tonight the change that's happening, is this redesignation on the general plan. You heard the results earlier of some of our community outreach meetings. There have indeed been a lot of those. We've mailed out close to 30,000 letters at this point. We've had innumerable events out in the area with neighbors living in the area, at the school and at other locations. We had the roundtable events that most of you have been to downtown, where we had civic leaders and others talking about this. We've been to homeowners association meetings. We've talked to businesses in the area. We've talked to the airport. Lots of people, lots of meetings. We notified everybody within a bubble around the site, 1 mile in each direction except to the north. The north, you hit that power line corridor up there and the freeway, so that seemed like a sort of natural barrier. So this is kind of showing the area that was notified. That's where the 28,000 letters went out to. I got to say, for having sent 28,000 letters, I am stunned at how positive the response has been. I always thought we'd get a positive response because it's a cool vision and it gets people excited and it's consistent with what people in this area have said they wanted. But I had this belief that if you sent 28,000 letters, there'd be at least 1,000 people show up mad at you. And frankly, we haven't had any. We've had overwhelmingly positive response. Have lots of questions, lots of issues, lots of concerns people wanted to talk through, but very positive responses. So that's really what's before you tonight. I thought I'd just comment briefly on one other question that has come up. This slide is here to say if you have questions, we're glad to answer them, but I'm going to anticipate one, which is about some of the job-generating projections and statistics. We're going to do, as I understand it, a work study on Thursday morning to get into this in greater detail. And the detail about it is really about the PCD, but some of it is embedded in the general plan numbers. So I thought it might be worth taking just a minute and talking about that. First statistic that's worth knowing is your general plan recognizes that Mesa currently has a jobs per capita ratio of 0.34. Okay, so there's only, for every person who lives here, there's only a third of a job. That's the bedroom community status that you've worried about for a long time. The countywide average of that is 0.46. So you're below the average for Maricopa County. You're clearly a bedroom community currently. The Mesa General Plan has wanted to raise that to the top quartile in Maricopa County, which would be 0.64. If you view the Mesa Proving Ground itself as a unit, depending on how you project statistics, and all of these things are projections. These job numbers, it's a little bit like guessing what the Dow Jones is going to be in like 30 years. This is a tough thing to do. But the Mesa Proving Ground is 1.2 to 1.8. So there are more jobs than people, to the tune of almost twice as many at the high end of the job projection numbers. That's the range. How much that helps Mesa overall depends on what happens in the rest of the city. These are some numbers that you've seen in the general plan. Frankly, this was pretty complicated to do. When we started this process, the general plan did not identify a specific number of jobs that it estimated could be created in the Mesa Proving Ground site. We had to do some extrapolation to get numbers to do that. The first ones you see there, the 25,000 to 41,000, that's using two different methodologies applied to the existing general plan. It's not about a range of between 25 and 41. It's two different ways to calculate what the total jobs would be at build-out under the existing general plan. The 25 is based on taking your existing general plan, looking at all the land uses in the whole city, looking at how many jobs were projected for all of those at the realization of that general plan, and then dividing it by how many acres of each of those land uses was within the proving grounds. So it's just, it's a geographic calculation looking at the proving ground as a subset of the overall general plan. That came up with 25,000. The 41,000 is an analysis that Elliot Pollack did for us, which is based on looking at the existing general plan, reducing it to how many buildings would be built, just based on some assumptions about industrial zoning and those kinds of things, and then multiplying by how many jobs per square foot that might represent. That came out with the higher number at 41. But it doesn't say that the existing general plan will create somewhere between 25 and 41. It's one method says total build out 25, one says total build out 41. Our estimate is based on using the same method as the Elliott Pollack method. And what we did was to recognize that our general plan amendment, based on the mix of uses we expect, the development of the cores, has these more intense jobs, we hope higher paying jobs, and we also hope, frankly, that the jobs can develop at an earlier point in time. One of the things that Pollack had said about the existing general plan is there's enough industrial out there for like a multi-hundred-year supply, so it might take a long time to get there. So using Elliott Pollack's method, again, at build-out of our projected maximum is 50,000 jobs. So the apples-to-apples comparison here that works the best is the 50 to 41. Both of those are based on complete build-out under both the existing general plan and the general plan as we have proposed it. So that's I was confused about this, frankly, till I went back and reread this stuff and tried to figure out how it all fit together. I figured it out this morning and felt compelled to explain it to you. I'm sure you were riveted by that. Just to wind up back to questions, it's been a pleasure to speak with you about this. This is only chapter one of what we'll be talking to you about. It is an exciting thing. We've had enormously positive feedback from the citizens, from the business community, and from the Planning Commission and the staff, and we'd be glad to answer any questions you have about tonight's action.
Thank you, Mr. Gammage. Councilmember Summers.
I love the presentation. I'm going to go home and download it off a podcast and watch you over and over again. Because this is the part I was waiting to see is that job number, and I know we've got to see that in a little bit more detail, and there's a multi-page report that I would just love to read at some point. I don't know why. I'm sick, I suppose, but this is the important part, and what some folks had discussed, actually a lot of them had discussed, is the encouragement was this project's going to be the impetus for the high-wage jobs and that were described in the Urban Land Institute study about 2 years ago. And in fact, DMB has really embraced that in the narrative, the piles of narrative in there on one of these pages of how that high-wage job is very important, and we're going to accomplish that through density, through synergy with the airport, through the Gaylord properties, and a few things that are on the cooking right now that we can't talk about, but it's a very exciting project, and I look forward to hearing more of the details before we finalize this whole thing. But I had asked downstairs if we are okay in approving this, and we're good. So if I could do the motion, Mayor, I'd like to make that motion that we approve.
Well, I guess you can make it. We still have to stab it. We'll go ahead. Still more presentations, but we'll go ahead. We have a motion by Councilmember Summers to approve, second by Vice Mayor Jones. Any other questions for Mr. Gammage?
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. I have several requests here that also spoke on item 3A, item 3A being the public hearing portion. You could also speak on item 3B and say the same thing, but I'm assuming that you would say the same thing for 3B that you would say for 3A. Just a parliamentary kind of deal. Mr. Wesley.
Mayor and Council, just quickly, because you've had a pretty good background already on this major plan amendment, just to hit on a couple of items. The City of Mesa General Plan sets forth the criteria and procedures for considering a major general plan amendments. By state statute, they can come to you one time a year, and all major plan amendments have to be heard at one hearing before any action is taken. Within the plan, we talk about a couple of basic criteria that need to be considered when reviewing a major plan amendment. The first of those is, does it constitute an overall improvement to the general plan? As we have reviewed this particular application, the staff's opinion that indeed it does. As Mr. Gamage has pointed out, the modification creates for greater synergy for development in the area. We think it provides greater opportunity to bring in the types of uses and the mix of those uses that we've envisioned in the area than the current designation of individual land uses would do. You know, we've been working on the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan, and although it's not quite finished yet, we've gotten far enough down that process to gain, again, a picture of what it is we're looking for here. And that plan is talking about this area developing into a mixed-use community, an area that would have a variety of land uses located in close proximity to each other in a more mixed urban environment than we've seen in the past. And this major plan amendment goes in that same direction, so they're working well together. Another criteria for consideration of a major plan amendment is it doing any harm? Is it taking us in an opposite direction from anything in the plan? Is it consistent with the rest of the plan? And again, in staff's review and analysis of this plan, we believe that indeed it meets that criteria, that it's not inconsistent with any other parts of the plan, it's not doing any other harm with what the vision for the city has been. So for those reasons, staff is supportive of the major plan amendment. I would make one other addition, though. Mr. Gamage talked about the change in colors as being the primary thing, and typically that is with plan amendments. However, with this particular land use category, because on the map it just gives us one color, the other thing that goes with this is a project narrative. And the resolution, if it's approved, will reference that project narrative, and it sets out many of the goals for this area that Mr. Gamage talked about in terms of the numbers of jobs and the type of development that would occur. And so when we later look at the zoning and development of the property, we'll look back to that project narrative to ensure that they are moving the development of the property in that direction. And again, that project narrative speaks to the things that Mr. Gamage has talked about for the area. And so again, staff's in support of this major plan amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Wesley. Any discussion from council members? Mr. Gamage, this is a major milestone. You don't have to get up. I'll talk to you. This is a major milestone. And once again, there's been a lot of things going on out in this area in the last few weeks, a lot of exciting things. And as you said, this is just the first chapter. We're glad you brought lots of pictures because we like pictures. And the colors are nice, even though it's, you know, diagonal, even nicer. But we appreciate the fact that we're setting a framework for really a new journey. And this is pretty exciting. It also carries some risk with it. I mean, we're all going down a new road. And I think this is a new road that is has a lot of potential, has a lot of opportunity. I'm sure there are going to be some challenges. You know, you don't have opportunity in anything that's worthwhile without having a lot of challenges. So I'm excited to see this change, and this represents a major milestone for us. And I appreciate all the work that's gone into this by staff and by DMB and all the others to date. And I really appreciate that because this is a big deal, and I hope we understand what a major a big deal it is. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a motion on the floor. A second. If there's no further discussion, please vote. The vote is 7-0 in the affirmative.
Thank you,
item
Mayor.
Item 3B passes. Thank you. We'll now open the public hearing for item 4, and this is a public hearing on Major General Plan Amendment GP Major 08-02, District 6. Once again, as with item 3, 4A is the public hearing portion. 4B will be the action on the resolution. They are related. They're the same issue and same item. I don't have any requests for items from, public hearing is open. I was skipping to 4B already. So I don't have any requests here. Do we have any, Ms. Crocker?
Mayor, no requests were received.
Do we have any questions or comments during the public hearing portion from members of the council? There being none, I declare this public hearing closed. We'll move on to item 4B, GP Major 08-02 for medium density residential and a myriad of other things. To mixed-use community for approximately 1,699 acres. Paul Gilbert, I'm assuming you're representing the applicant. Mr. Gilbert.
Thank you. Your assumption is correct. Paul Gilbert, 4800 North Scottsdale Road. I preface my comments by agreeing with Mr. Gamage. When one's coming in and asking for one category over all the acreage, it's a little boring. But I got thinking about it. Wouldn't it have been fun to be Grady Gamage's fourth grade teacher? That would be quite an experience. Well, anyway,
I'm just wondering if you're going to borrow from Mr. Gamage and you're billing your client separately. That doesn't seem right to me.
Now you've touched something. In fact, I thought Grady was mixed up, that he was getting paid by the word tonight instead of by the presentation. I intend to be a much briefer, but many of the same points he made would apply to this case as well. This is a major amendment. We represent, of course, the 1,700 acres that are the southern portion of the General Motors Proving Grounds. We are different in that there are some things that distinguish this property from the DMB, and I might add we've coordinated very carefully with DMB all the way through, and that's been a good and salutary experience. Importantly, the future state 802 goes through the heart and middle of our property, and you'll recall, and this is what makes this case very different from the DMB case, we're not asking for rezoning. We only have a general plan amendment case before you this evening. So we don't have the detail that's following the DMB application for the general plan amendment with specific zoning cases. But we have something that's very analogous and that is important that we put on the record. And that is, we did a major general plan amendment in 2006. I think I'm well within the mark to say that this general plan amendment was vigorous as it went through the process. And we had, frankly, opposition from Boeing, from your staff, and from the airport authority. We eventually came to a collaborative process where we came through with a compromise that everyone was in favor of. And as we reasoned together, we want to make the point that while the general plan amendment that we're seeking this evening is mixed use.
Sorry, maybe you could turn the lights on. We have some shadows there. Yeah.
I have no idea how to turn them on.
Sorry, good help's hard to find, Mayor, but keep it up, Susan. You're doing okay.
Is there a switch down there on the, there you go.
There we go.
Get the.
You want this one?
All right. What we're asking for is mixed-use community, okay? That's all one category. But in this case, as we have made clear in our narrative and in every single presentation that we've made before your planning commission, before the public hearings in Queen Creek, that when we went through the process in 2006, we got the following plan approved. We want you to know that while we're seeking one category of general plan, when we come back for rezoning, we are going to be asking for basically the same categories that you see on the current approved general plan amendment. Now, that's good in a lot of respects. It gives us some protection, but importantly, it brings to fruition the compromise we made with Boeing and with the airport authority, with your staff, and basically with the city. So if you're not comfortable when we come back with the general plan amendment as it currently stands, then you shouldn't vote for this case tonight. Because when we come back, we're putting you on notice, as we again have all the way through the process, that when we come in for zoning, we're going to seek something very similar to what you see here. Now, you may say, well, if that's the case, Gilbert, why are you here doing a general plan amendment? First of all, the general plan amendment was conceptualized later than 2006 when we came in for the existing current general plan amendment. So we didn't have this opportunity. Secondly, and importantly, when this mixed-use community zoning category was created, it was done so with the entire General Motors Proving Ground property in mind. And so, therefore, it was important to come in and do this all at one time, and I believe you will find some support for that proposition in the staff report. So we're not asking for zoning at this time, but we're not also in the posture of asking for a blank canvas. We'll be coming back with something very similar to this. This general plan amendment does give us some flexibility, but we worked too hard and went through too arduous a process, candidly. And I see the vice mayor smiling because he was on the council at the time and remembers, of course, that process well. So we have asked and made part of the narrative that the current general plan amendment be the guide to be used when we come in for rezoning. That's consistent with the compromise and the collaborative effort that we went through previously. I believe your staff is in full support of this, and the resolution as currently worded inculcates this concept. I do want to basically talk briefly about our project vision, because that's important as we reason together on this application. There are two major components. We have a suburban core north of the freeway and an employment core south of the freeway. The employment core will be a high-density urban environment focused around the intersection of Ellsworth Road and Williamsfield Road. Here we envision mid-rise buildings, high-density employment uses. This is an ideal opportunity. The Airport Authority has been very much in support of this employment core. This is where we'll be putting it. It's proximate to the airport. It's at the intersection of two major roads, and is an exciting opportunity to have some very good density and production of employment opportunities. The second thing I would point out briefly is the suburban core. Suburban core is planned north of the freeway and is located in this area here. And it is, as the name states, a suburban core, a retail commercial core, and it will be located there approximate to the freeway. The rest of the plan involves a plethora of other uses dealing with retail, residential, and industrial uses. The last thing we point out is that the future state 802 freeway, as I mentioned earlier, goes through the middle of our property, and we will be working with the city to bring that to fruition. Importantly, and this is why it's important for the city to keep in mind that the 206 general plan amendment needs to stay part and parcel of this, is that we agreed to do a corridor, a freeway corridor, and to keep that available so that when the time comes for the condemnation, we have that available. And we have honored that commitment to date and will continue to honor it even with this general plan amendment change. I believe, Mayor and members of the council, that covers the important facets of this application. We also have had copious neighborhood meetings. We've gone to the same meetings. In fact, Mayor, it's interesting you would make the comment at the last hearing I offered to swap speeches with Grady. So, you know, he had heard mine enough, I had heard his enough, but he didn't think I could give it with the same aplomb that he did, so we didn't make the change.
So but what you're saying is that DMB has the same billing problem that Pacific Proving has.
I think we're a little less expensive, but we won't comment on that briefly.
But quality.
Yes, absolutely.
You're better no value question is about what it. We might yes. want to say.
Yeah. Mayor, that concludes our presentation. We would be delighted to answer any, well, delighted is a little strong. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you have concerning this project. But we're here with staff support, Planning Commission support, and we have not had one neighborhood comment in opposition to this plan.
Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. Councilmember Summers.
Thank you. By the way, it's been my experience too. I'm absolutely amazed in how much support there is for this general plan out there. I've been my experience too. I haven't been able to attend all the meetings, but as many as I've been able to go to, everybody's in support. The letters we get are in support. So I'm in support of this. Matter of fact, I've already made the motion. Just a couple questions for you, some of which I already know the answers to, but the I know you remember, pointing to your client there, the Boeing deal, yep, which was no residential south of Freeway, south of Williamsfield Road. It looks mm-hmm. to me like this plan keeps to that. Wouldn't that be correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
We always reserve the opportunity to come in and do an amendment to that, but this plan honors that requirement.
The rotor wing out at and Boeing is a huge business and a major employer here in Mesa. The rotor wing has different flight patterns, so they want to keep to this the 802 corridor, and in order to fly over that, we can't have residential there. The agreement was that we would increase the density of the housing to the north.
That is correct.
Which it sounds like DMB is increasing some of that density as well. Does this seem to integrate well between the DMB property and your property?
It does. As I indicated, we've had many meetings with DMB to effectuate that integration. They're supporting our plan. We're supporting their plan. I think they integrate admirably.
Do you anticipate this will come through when you do go for the zoning to have the land use groups similar to what DMB has put forward, or do you suspect a more traditional zoning? How do you think that's going to work out?
That is a difficult question to answer. I think I can, in all candor and accuracy, more importantly, indicate that we probably will not be looking at a more traditional approach. I think some of the same creativity we intend mm-hmm. to bring to this case as well. The difference is we have not marketed the property, nor do we have users at this point, and therefore it's important that we maintain flexibility, which importantly is the primary reason we're pursuing this general plan amendment.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of the flexibility issue does have to, I would suspect, and I'm not a planner, but I would suspect that the land will likely, at least in the short term, develop from the north to the south. So we'll see that development come through along Ellsworth Road and more of that development head in this direction until, and I think what the key to this piece is going to be the eventually we're going to move that, the terminal from the west side of the airport over to the east side of the airport, at which point the employment core here off of Ellsworth on the southern part of this really starts to capture quite a few jobs, I would anticipate, given that that airport moves over. This is, I think, your piece is really fascinating because I think that's where we're going to capture a lot of those Fortune 500 companies, mm-hmm. potentially, as we've seen a lot of some of the Southern California airports as well. So having that flexibility allows it to tie in with the property to the north, some of the uses around it as well, and also capture the opportunities that are going to happen when that terminal moves over, which I think is going to be sooner than we all anticipated the way that that's growing. So I've already made the motion for approval, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember. Any other questions for Mr. Gilbert?
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. As Councilmember Summers indicated, we have a motion from Councilmember Summers, a second by Councilmember Kavanaugh. I don't have any requests from citizens. Have any been turned in?
No additional requests, Mayor.
Okay. Mr. Wesley, turn over to staff.
Mayor and Council, again, just briefly, this is a request for a major plan amendment, like the last one, following the same procedures. We have the same criteria that we're looking at. Primarily, is this an improvement over the current general plan designations? And again, staff, in reviewing the project narrative that's been submitted with this and will be adopted as part of the resolution, do believe that this will constitute an improvement, even though they're talking basically the same land uses as what was on the property previously. By the very fact that we now have this project narrative that gets adopted and sets that target for the future zoning development of the property a little bit more specifically than we did before, that gives something that staff and the council will be able to work with when that development does come in to ensure that the applicant is moving in this direction and gives us that that goal to shoot for. The numbers of jobs and the types of jobs, the mixing of those things and the way those can impact the transportation system, the Aerotropolis concept around the airport, it furthers those all. It again helps implement the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan that we've been working on. So staff is supportive of this and recommends approval.
Thank you. I have one question. With the property to the north, even though they're not technically connected, the zoning case, we certainly, and the general plan amendment, we certainly have something in front of us that shows what DMB is moving toward and what they're really trying to accomplish. And here we have a general plan from 2006, which is currently, that is the general plan. We're going to replace that with another much more broad general plan designation, which in essence makes the old general plan sort of go away from a legal standpoint. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes, Mayor, and certainly the land use designations that we see on the map go away and we'll come to the one color.
Now, Mr. Gilbert mentioned that they're going to still conform, but how do we bridge that gap from the fact that we are replacing a legal designation now with a single color, single definition? We don't have a zoning case in process where we can get a specific thing, a specific idea of what's going on. We do have a former general plan, which the applicant, Mr. Gilbert, said we're going to follow that. How do those two connect, though?
I'll take a stab at that, okay. John, if that's all right. In our narrative, we have specifically laid out the fact that when we come back in, we will be seeking zoning consonant with the 2006 general plan. That's part of our narrative. In the resolution for adoption, you are adopting not only this general plan, but you are also adopting our narrative. And that's where the protection comes for you and for us, that we honor the previous commitments, but also get the benefits of the previous commitments. So
in other words, this narrative, as I think Mr. Wesley explained before, is required under the mixed use. The narrative has, as an exhibit or as part of the narrative or however you've done it, really the specified land uses in the general plan that was previously approved. And while this new one gives you more flexibility, mm-hmm. you've agreed and basically put part of the record and part of the ordinance, some general constraints, although it certainly will allow you some flexibility within those. The colors and the lines aren't exact like they would have been under the 2006, but the general nature of it remains the same, and you're willing to commit to that.
Perfectly said.
Okay.
Yes, Mayor, I would have said it very much the same. Mr. Gilbert always speaks well. The project
well,
narrative...
Well, he's trolling for votes, though.
the project narrative is adopted by resolution, and so it's not quite as firm and fast as a absolute color on a map, but again, it's what the council has adopted as the plan for the area, and so when they come through with their zoning, that plan needs to be consistent with that, or have to explain to council why it's different and get support for those changes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Once again, I'll repeat, this is pretty exciting. This is a big step for all of us. You know, we have five, six, 7 square miles, I guess, however much it is, that are now really, we're seeing something at the end of the tunnel. Light is coming up, and as I've said before, this is where dreams and vision, all of a sudden you see reality come into place, and it's pretty exciting that we've moved this far. So thank you very much for your efforts and your work. If there's no other comments, please vote. The vote is 7-0 in the affirmative. Item 4B passes. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is item 4B, amending Chapter 17 of the Zoning Ordinance by revising existing definitions and requirements related to the replacement of manufactured homes, a maximum of 1,100 square feet within recreational vehicle parks and recreational vehicle subdivisions. 9B, 9 Bravo. I have 3 requests to speak. I guess we'll start with Mr. David Udall. Mr. Udall.
Grady need his laptop, I wonder. If not, I'll close it down. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Dave Udall, 30 West 1st Street, here in support of the ordinance that you have before you tonight on 9B. I represent Palm Gardens Mobile Home, who is kind of the real party in interest here. A little history. I became involved nearly a year, 14, 15 months ago, when we came in for what we thought would be a simple variance, like we've done for 20 years as we've attempted to upgrade these mobile homes and RV parks. Staff, after a few months, concluded, no, you need to rezone the property. So we filed for rezoning and a PAD, paid a very large fee, I might add. Then as we got into it, it became evident that that wouldn't work. And so in frustration, we actually appealed to you, Mayor, and the staff went back to work, back to the drawing boards. And what you see before you as a special use permit is the result of many hours working with staff to get it. So it's an individual park situation where you can take a look at it as a special use permit, get it upgraded and so forth. And that's what's before you tonight. We are in favor of the ordinance at 1,100 square feet because of the time factor. If you decide to go to the 950, which I presented to you last Thursday with the agreement that we had with everybody in the room, now one of those persons has since changed their mind and says, no, I've changed my mind and I don't agree to it. If we do the 950 that you spoke about, then that kicks us off another month. Board of Adjustment would not be till November, and we'd frankly miss another season as people come and want to buy these mobile homes. So we're anxious for you to vote tonight on the 1,100 square foot that's before you for the simple reason that if it's put off, we're likely to miss another season. Secondly, this is an incremental improvement. We all know the history. You've heard it. I've never heard so much discussion about a relatively minor case as this one, both last Thursday and today. We all know that as these are old parks, they have side yard setbacks that worked 50 years ago. They don't now. And I thought it was interesting. Gordon said that even the subdivisions have blanket variances for the parks. I think I've done many of them myself starting in the mid-80s. So this will be an improvement whether it's a 920 limit or a 950 limit or 1100. We want the 1100 just because that will move us forward. What do we get with a special use permit? It allows the city to look at each project that comes in for the benefit of those who may have been involved in the fire service. It's an opportunity for the fire departments to weigh in, and in fact, our project adds two fire hydrants. We add exterior landscaping on Lindsay Road, I think it is, that's not there now. And so it actually will be an overall improvement to the park. The competition says, well, let's do this all together. These are apples, and we all need to be treated the same. On page 10, you have this spreadsheet that shows the four different types of RV and recreational vehicle and manufactured housing. I note the minimum space lot, recreational vehicles, which we are, is 1,200 square feet. The principal opponents of this have a manufactured home park of 3,000 square feet minimum. So would you have different setbacks? I think you would. You know, our lots are 30 by 40. You can't very well put an 1,100 square foot house on a 1,200 square foot lot. It just isn't going to happen in the real world. In terms of, well, we want two lots or two cars instead of one, keep in mind these are 1,200 square foot lots. There's not room for two, nor the type of people that live there, are they going to have to. You get down to the manufactured home subdivision, that's 6,000 square feet. That's a regular single-family house in an R16. Do they need two parking spots? Clearly they do. So we would submit to you that really we're talking apples and oranges and that we ought to incrementally improve what we have. Next item, and I only have two left, we have in support the manufactured housing communities of Arizona. Susan Brendan is here somewhere. I speak for you in the sense of you're supportive of the 1,100 square foot compromise, and we're anxious for it to go forth. Lastly, I think it's interesting, the letter that you received that started all this brouhaha, that I have a copy of the one to Mr. Finter a week ago, where we object, it's under the radar, let's pull this off, let's stall it along. And then paragraph one, it allows RV park owners to install 950 square feet livable. What impact does that have on the rest of us? Do we really want or need additional competition? And I'd say sure. It concludes after making the argument about two cars on a 3,000 square foot lot, one car on a 1,200. What do these larger densities do to rent structures? I'd submit they probably drive prices down, and that's good for the those that use it here. So we would urge you to pass the ordinance as it is before you, and let's get this show on the road and make this season. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Udall. Oh, Councilmember.
Oh, no. If you have someone who wants to speak, let them.
We have a couple more. Do you want to?
No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
If you have, yeah. The next speaker is Mr. Charles Heel. I'm sorry. Heel Mantle. Sorry, Charles.
Thank you, Mayor. That's okay. I'd rather have your vote than have you pronounce my name correctly. Hopefully I can get one or the other.
Please state your name.
Or Charles
your name.
Mantle.
You just did. Your address and other thing.
Charles Heel Mantle on P.O. Box 1833, Tempe, Arizona 85280. I'm here on behalf of Silver Ridge, and I would first start by saying I agree with what Mr. Udall has said. 1,100 square feet is probably not our perfect ordinance, but we'd like to move forward now. I'd point out that we've been working with the City of Mesa planning staff for almost 2 years now, trying to create a better style of life for our residents. Silver Ridge is a little bit different situation than Palm Gardens. It's a previously subdivided property. Today, Silver Ridge could sell individual RV lots with individual RVs on it, and we've chosen not to do that because, as it's been pointed out, the housing stock has been there for quite some time, and frankly, it's not getting better with age. We know that that park is likely to remain a park probably indefinitely, not only because it's subdivided, but because of its location. We can see the freeway. It looks beautiful from where we are, but there simply isn't any way to get to it. We just see the ramp go up and around the park. And that means that it's probably not ripe for redevelopment. Not as something other than a park, but we're lucky. We've had residents and lots of our residents, in fact, the majority of our residents, have lived in Silver Ridge for decades. They like where they live. And we're spending millions of dollars to upgrade the infrastructure, putting in two new pools, redoing entirely the clubhouse, really fixing the place up. And it's a nice place to live, but it will be a much better place to live. Our residents, we've recently converted the park to a 55-plus park. And frankly, they'd like to have a higher quality of housing stock. They don't want to live somewhere else. They don't want us even moving them from one lot to another. They like where they live, and it's their community, and they in most cases, like who their neighbors are. Occasionally that's an issue, but not very often. And they don't want to move to another lot. And frankly, if we had to redo streets and all kinds of other things, it would prevent them from being able to purchase an affordable, better product. Why is it better? It's better for simple reasons. First of all, as it pointed out, they're much safer units. They're newer. They're made of higher quality materials. And frankly, they're safer from a fire perspective. But they're also more convenient for the people that live there. The folks that live in a 55-year-plus park, frankly, don't like walking upstairs, and a manufactured housing unit is closer to the ground and really allows them to have a higher quality of life. It may sound almost foolish to say that climbing up a few stairs every day makes a big difference, but for the folks in our park, it really does. Living closer to the ground so they don't have to go up and down stairs every time they want to go outside makes a big difference, makes a huge difference in their lives. The proposed ordinance, and we're asking again, as Mr. Udall did, that you vote tonight so that we could move forward. Again, 1,100 square feet wouldn't be our preference, but it's certainly something that we can work with. Staff, in discussing this, and again, discussing it for almost 2 years, took time to think about how this might work. And we're hearing from others that maybe this is some kind of blanket approval. Frankly, nothing could be further from the truth. What you'd be approving if you voted to approve staff's recommendation tonight is a conditional use permit. As much as we enjoy being here tonight, this won't be our last public hearing if you approve the code change. We're still going to have to go through review, and that review is going to look at some very important things, things that, frankly, Silver Ridge does well on. We have substantially more open space and public space than is required. We have substantially greater parking ratio than what's required. But frankly, unless somebody is willing to make the changes, we simply can't upgrade the housing stock. And that will be a real disappointment for the folks that live in our community. Now, for the competition argument, I'm almost there. If I could just finish up, Mayor. From the competition perspective, frankly, the ones who will benefit from competition will be the residents. It won't be us. It won't be the other park owners. It will be the people who live in Mesa, and we'd ask that you consider that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next is Mr. Sean Lake. Mr. Lake.
I'm not sure how that's going to work, but it'll work. Mayor, Council Members, Sean Lake, 1930 East Brown Road, Mesa, Arizona, here on behalf of the Thesman Communities. The Thesman Communities, they own Las Palmas Grand, and Palmas del Sol, three manufactured home parks within the city of Mesa. I am here on behalf of that ownership entity. I'm here to speak this evening about unintended consequences. Now, let me make it very clear, as well as the Thesmans, we are not against upgrading the stock of housing in the city of Mesa. We are in support of upgrading the stock. We want the overall community to look better and nicer, and so we're wholeheartedly in support of most everything that was said here this evening. But we are against moving forward with something just for the sake of moving forward. We don't think that this ordinance has been thought out. It will affect and apply to the entire city, not just a couple of parks here. What are one of these unintended consequences that we've been able to figure out? Before you, zoom out. Anyway, what I tried to lay out on this exhibit is an unintended consequence. What this ordinance does is it will allow an RV park that historically has had smaller units place a put a larger home on the same size lot as a manufactured home park, which is quite interesting to me. By changing this ordinance, we're allowing an RV park to put a larger home than you would allow in a manufactured home park. And how do they do that? Because they get to keep the old RV setbacks that were adopted and put in place. Because last time we wanted to upgrade the housing stock, and so we put in these 3 and 3 foot setbacks and the three foot rear because we wanted to upgrade the setbacks. So we're going to keep those setbacks, and then that was done last time, and we're going to bring in this new housing stock or manufactured homes, and they'll be allowed to have the old setbacks or the 3, 3, and 3. Now, Palmas del Sol is Mr. Sheffield indicated downstairs, there's maybe 2 or 3 manufactured home parks that still have the 5 and 10 setbacks. Well, we have 3 of them. So if there's 2 or 3 parks left in the city that have the 5 and 10 setbacks, apparently we own all 3. And so then we have a concern of why are we adopting an ordinance that puts 3 parks that my client owns on a different playing field? We're not against competition. We just want to make sure we're all on the same field. And we all have the same rules. We don't want to be put in a position where if you go to put a home into an RV park and you go to put a home in a manufactured home park, you have different rules. We want to be the same rules if you're going to put the same home in. That's all we're asking. We're not asking for for anything special here. We're just asking for the same thing that other people are asking, so that we're all put on the same playing field. So we would ask that the council, if they're going to move forward and amend something with the manufactured home and the RV park ordinance, that they would allow, if you're going to put in a manufactured home, these are the setbacks, whether you're in an RV park or a manufactured home park. And that way, everybody plays according to the same rules. And so with that, we would request that amendment to be added or delay the project so that we can work on it. So I would be happy to answer any questions or sit down if you want me to, Mayor.
Councilmember Richens.
If we were to apply the setbacks for manufactured home zoning standard to the RV zoning standard, what is the maximum size unit that we could get in a RV zoning?
Mayor, Councilmember Richards, it all depends upon the lot. You'll notice in the code it talks about a 1,200-foot minimum lot. Well, that's a minimum. All RV parks don't have 1,200-foot lots. They have larger lots. That's why we're talking about larger units, 1,100 square feet, which is the ordinance before you. Obviously, you're not putting an 1,100 square foot lot home on a 1,200 square foot lot. All parks are different. Some have 1,200 foot lots. Some have 3,000 square foot lots. It all depends upon the size of the lot. And so I can't tell you what it would be. But what it does is it puts an RV park with a 3, 3, and 3 and in a manufactured home with the 5 and 10, which we don't think is fair.
But Mr. Lake, wouldn't you agree that the nature of these parks and as they were developed, even though the minimum standards may be different, hasn't the market in the past created a natural difference? I mean, you have a manufactured home park, which just by design and by history has larger lots than a normal RV lot would have. And wouldn't the normal RV park lot, just because it was designed for traditional RVs, wouldn't that naturally be smaller?
Mayor, you are absolutely correct, Mayor, in that the older RV parks had the smaller units. And I hate to take Gordon's old presentation from years ago when RV parks were originally designed for 8-foot wide units, because that's what you drove down the road. And then the units got bigger to 12 feet, and that's why we went to the smaller setbacks on the side. But not all RV parks are designed for the old tow-behind RVs. There's some with larger spaces, and those are the spaces that they're trying to put these larger manufactured homes into an RV park.
I'm sort of putting you on the spot, but what do you think the difference would be? And maybe you can't answer this. I mean, are we talking as a normal manufactured home lot twice the size? Is it about the same size? I mean, I'm trying to get a handle on whether it's been said, like Mr. Udall said, it's apples and oranges. How much is it apples and oranges? Or in your view, it's not so much apples and oranges, what I'm hearing.
Mayor, council members, in our view, if the lot's 1,200 feet, there's not much you can get on it. And so it really doesn't concern us. But there's lots out there that are larger. And I can't tell you how many of the stock for the city of Mesa are the larger lots. But that's what I'm concerned about, because there are larger lots out there where they can get larger units on there. And we're okay with that, just as long as we all play according to the same setbacks.
Is your concern the size of the unit, or the fact that someone can put the same size as maybe you're putting on your clients and only have to get away with maybe one car or things like that? What's your major concern?
We are in support of increasing and upgrading the housing stock. So if they want to put a larger unit, that's fine with us. We just want to make sure that if we're on this side of the street and we want to put in a 950-square-foot unit and we have to put in these setbacks, and then somebody goes across the street, they have to do the same thing that we would have to do.
But
that's
give
our
you
only
marketing
concern.
Advantage, the fact that you can put in a two-car carport and that you have larger setbacks, so therefore you're not quite as tied in? Or does it work that way?
Mayor, council members, no, it doesn't work that way, because our parks are age-restricted parks, and a lot of the people, for years we've been asking the city to go specifically to one parking spot, because a lot of our age-restricted and our tenants only have one car. And so we've been asking to go to one car for many, many, many years, and now the city is telling us, no, 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 but for RV parks, you can have one car, but you can have the larger unit. And so it's not only the setbacks, but it's the one car as well. And so we've been asking for that year for years and been turned down, and now somebody else is getting it through a text amendment, which, again, if we're the only three parks that this is hurting, that kind of seems unfair to me as well.
Any other questions for Mr. Lake? Thank you. We have one more request to speak, and that's from Carol Villard. Ms. Villard? Can somebody help?
Before I became ill and had my surgery, I had lived in an RV for 5 years and traveled all over the country. And when I heard you discussing this earlier, I decided I had to stay and at least voice my opinion. And it sounds to me like the RV parks are trying to do away with the RVs, and they're trying to make them a, what is it called, like Las Palmas or something, you know, where they have the permanent structures, ground level, the whole bit. What happens to all the people who live in the parks that come in there? I mean, we have a lot of RV people who come to Mesa and Apache Junction and that every year. And you're really putting them out of the market here. You're asking them not to come back. Plus, you're allowing park owners to make themselves into permanent places with very little lots. Right now, if you go into these parks and you drive around, a little park model, 400 square feet, with an Arizona room, some of them will even take the parking lot space and make another room out of it. All right, there's nothing that restricts doing that. Where is the people going to park? If these big units come in and take over this space, where are the cars going to be? There's no room for them. Can a pickup truck drive into one of those lots? I don't think so. You know, would you like to live 3 foot away from your neighbor? I don't think so. I mean, I think if you're going to live in the permanent kind of structure, 5 feet is adequate. But it certainly isn't 3 feet. And I think that the way I look at it, having been a resident in several of the parks, it sounds to me like the owners are trying to pull the wool and they're trying to make them into a permanent park and not follow the rules for a permanent park. So that's just my opinion, and I'd like you to consider it before you vote on this thing.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Councilmember Summers, you have a question?
I think, is Tom Ellsworth in here? Because I think there's some confusion here between, we're talking about RV parks and manufactured homes and putting manufactured homes in RV parks. One has a 3 foot setback, the other a 5, one's a one car parking space, the other one is 2. Can we clarify which one is which? The old one would be, correct me if I'm wrong, the old one would be 3 foot setbacks and a one car parking space. The new one would be 5 feet and 2 cars?
Okay, let me, Mayor.
Yeah, see, it's second confusing.
I'll try to go through each one individually. There's the table that you see in the ordinance. Page 10 of the ordinance is essentially the table that's or is in the present code. The only thing that we're doing to that particular table is we're adding as a permitted or as a required zoning district for recreational subdivisions, the R2 PAD in addition to the R4 PAD. The minimum lot area or minimum space size for recreational vehicle parks is 1,200 square feet. A recreational vehicle subdivision, the minimum size is 1,750 square feet. An average of 2,000 throughout the project. A manufactured home park, the average space size is 3,000 square feet. A manufactured home subdivision, the minimum lot size is 6,000 square feet. In terms of the setbacks, the front setback in an RV park is 5 feet. In an RV subdivision, it's 7 feet. In a manufactured home park, it's 5 feet, same as the recreational vehicle park. And the front setback in a manufactured home subdivision is 20 feet because those are considered to be a single family use. Setbacks are 3 feet for the RV park, 5 feet for an RV subdivision, 5 feet for a manufactured home park, and 5 feet with 5 and 10 for a manufactured home subdivision. So the 3 feet only applies to the RV park. 5 and 5 are the setbacks for an RV subdivision and manufactured home park.
And to differentiate, an RV park generally would be where the resident does not own their space.
Correct. It would be under one ownership, and there would be several lease spaces.
Okay. Whereas an RV subdivision, they actually have or may have fee title.
Correct.
Ownership in their space.
The option is there for that,
yes. The option is there. Okay. But the option is not there for an RV park.
No, it's not. It's not okay. Subdivided. The rear setback for RV parks is 3 feet. The rear setback for an RV subdivision is 5 feet. For a manufactured home park, it's 10 feet. And for a manufactured home subdivision, it's 20 feet. And in terms of the parking requirements, it's one per space or lot for the RVs and two per space or lot for manufactured homes.
Councilmember Higgins.
Mr. Sheffield, what is the average house size in a manufactured home community and a manufactured home park? Do you have a feel of how big that might be? Is there a maximum?
No, there's not a maximum.
So it's just what? I mean, so you can have a double wide in some of these communities and have a 3,000 square foot home.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, that's correct.
So when we go and say, the maximum we want to put in these RVs park is 1,100 square feet, you still have to meet the space requirements here, and the average lot size, 2,000 square feet. So
for RV subdivisions, correct.
A subdivision. So when we, it's not really a fair comparison to say with a property that's so much bigger that they should be held to the same front setbacks as property that's actually three times as big and then 50% as large in the park.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, one of the philosophies that we try to use as a staff when we develop a code is we try to develop to what the general condition is, as opposed to try to let the exception drive the rule. And I think some of the things that Mr. Lake was talking about are exceptions. The majority of what you'll find in RV parks are lots that are right around 1,200 square feet. Generally, it's in the best interest of the property owner to try to put as many spaces in a park as they can. So that's why you have the minimum that's there. They're trying to increase the density because obviously the more contracts they have for leases, generally the more money they can make on the lot. So they're generally trying to get that density up as high as they can. Generally, the same thing is true for RV subdivisions. I will say, however, that there are more exceptions in RV subdivisions than there are in RV parks. And generally, that's more of a market condition where the person who subdivides the property wants to provide a variety of options for people, and they charge on a per square foot basis generally for the lot. So they get that money. That's a return that they get back anyway.
So
now, could I ask one thing?
Sure.
Go
ahead.
The 1,100 square foot limitation applies both the RV parks and RV subdivisions.
Yes.
All right. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You wrecked the old train. You got the train off the track, Mayor.
I'm sorry. Uh-oh. I think I'm in trouble.
Okay. No, I remember I was going to ask. So typically, would you expect someone to come in and put down a 1,000-square-foot house, manufactured home, or are they more likely to use that 450-foot park model, put their 300-foot, storage garage kind of unit, and then maybe pet the Arizona room? Because in my experience, in all my fun times walking through many, many, in fact, every park in my district, that seemed like the norm was, there wasn't a house just overflowing. It seemed to be a nice little park model and a little area for storage and a carport.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, in the RV park condition, you would normally see either a recreational vehicle, a motorhome, or like an Airstream travel trailer would be parked there, or you would get the park model with generally the small Arizona room addition and the storage room that would add up to 920 square feet. In the manufactured home parks, currently they are allowed to place RVs there as well as manufactured homes, and so you see a variety of conditions. As long as those units fit on those lots and fit within the setbacks, the city will allow RVs or manufactured homes to go into a manufactured home park.
But you still always have to have room for a parking spot. So, if you look at 1,200...
There's always two spaces.
But in an RV park or subdivision, you have 1,200 square feet or average of 2,000. Mm. In that, you still have to have a parking spot.
Yes.
And setbacks. So, we're not talking a massive piece of a massive house on that 1,700 square foot lot.
No,
it'd be pretty hard to get something.
It covers roughly 75% of the lot.
Right. So if it was all house, I bet you have that calculation and on the top of your head.
Sorry,
they're not going to get 1,000 square foot single building on there. More than likely, they are going to have the 450 square foot park model and their addition for like storage and their Arizona room.
Generally, they will build it out to the maximum they can now, which is the 920 square feet.
Thank you. Well, okay. If you're all done, I'm still talking. I'd be happy.
No, keep going.
No, I mean, I.
Floor is yours.
Floor is mine. I would like to make a motion that we approve whatever case this is. I'm sorry. Item 9B, is that right? Bravo. Or
Item 9B. Would you like to enter it in?
I would like to make a motion that we approve it as written.
We have a motion from Councilmember Higgins to approve and a second from Councilmember Summers. Any additional questions? Or Councilmember Summers.
Let me make a few comments on this. There's been some concern that this is not a perfect ordinance, and I'll have to concede that in a particular point. It certainly is not. Sometimes incrementalism works out pretty well. The question is, when we look at providing a better housing stock for our residents, for providing more options for our residents, does this get there? And I think it certainly is better than what we have. There's some concern about 3-foot setbacks versus 5-foot setbacks, and what we've heard through the history of our planning and zoning is that over a period of time, as the models have changed, as codes have changed, those ordinances have changed as well. And it may be, being a developer yourself, you've, I'm sure, been frustrated by the changing codes over time, particularly fire and building codes. And setbacks and how those have changed. And so will we have some 3-foot setbacks in existing properties? Yes. Will the new ones conform to 5? Sure. Will we have one car garages in some of these? We sure will, but we'll have two in others. And while most of these folks may own one car, they probably also own a golf cart that they use too. And you have to park that somewhere because it's a very economical and smart mode of transportation when you're going within the community. And hopefully in the future, as we build more integrated communities, we'll be able to use those golf carts to go actually to the store without the threat of bodily harm from going onto major arterial streets. So in the reason that I like this ordinance, and certainly over time when we start to look at our zoning code and that's a priority of this in this board, is that we finish the zoning code rewrite, we can look at where some of the problem areas might be. We get to fix those. But here's a better housing stock, another option for people whose tastes are changing and they own their lots, and they want to build a better product on this, and this could be it. One thing that this zoning ordinance doesn't do, and I think it's equally important to mention that as well, is it does not change. We're not taking smaller parks that may be ripe for redevelopment. We're not taking RV parks that are rentals and changing them into subdivisions. Because when you change it into subdivisions, and I know this can get confusing, but again, the parks are leased, the subdivisions are owned. And when somebody owns their lot, their rights are vested in that, they can put up, well, not whatever they want, but certainly the quality of the housing stock that they've had thus far could be better. And we can see some of that in County Islands in Maricopa County and in East Mesa and Dean and I's district. So the object of this, again, and I'll close it off, is just to provide a better housing stock. I think we meet that. Do the codes match up exactly? No, but I think they progress in a positive direction. Will there be other items we might want to fix on this when we come down to finalizing the zoning code? Yes, I think there will be. So that's why I'm going to be in support and second the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to commend our staff. I think Jeff and Gordon, you did an excellent job in your staff report and presenting to the council. And as the council recall, I originally was opposed to making this change. And Jeff and Gordon, you almost persuaded me. I thought you did a very good job at dealing with a difficult subject, trying to, with a goal of making these housing types to be more sustainable over time, and I want to compliment you on that. However, I think it is preferable to approach this subject in the overall context of the zoning code, because I believe that an incremental approach such as we're doing tonight does have the problem of more likely unintended consequences than a holistic approach can do. I think our planning and zoning decisions and crafting and drafting need to take that into account, to look to see how we add public value, to see how we our decisions advance the cause of sustainable housing. And the hybrid parks that we have now that have been created over the course of the years, I think, are textbook examples of housing that might not be sustainable in the long run. And through the years that I have been on council, we've dealt with very difficult situations of dealing with RVs and manufactured homes coming together, with RVs morphing into homes, created many, many issues that we've dealt with over the course of time. And I think that still what we're doing here is creates a situation where I think there is a question about the sustainability of these hybrid developments. And I hope I'm wrong, but I think the wiser approach is to approach it in a more comprehensive evaluation of our zoning code. So that's why I'll be voting against the motion. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Richens.
I'm going to agree with Dennis on this one. We have a lot of these RV-type parks in West Mesa that are sorely in need for redevelopment. By setting a standard of a maximum or a minimum of 10 acres, it does nothing to begin to address our West Mesa parks and the huge need for redeveloping some of the housing types in those. That's my main concern. I'd like to take a more measured approach as well, that we've already started down the road in the zoning code to start looking at these things and addressing them. And I'd like to, you know, to just do a patchwork solution, to me doesn't feel real comfortable. You know, having worked on redevelopment issues in West Mesa, I know what a big issue some of our 50 and 60 year old trailer parks that we have in West Mesa and the difficulties that we have there with a variety of issues. So I'm going to also vote against the motion.
Thank you. Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be supporting this motion that's been stated, but I share the concerns of Councilmember Kavanaugh and Councilmember Richens. There is something we need to do, and that's address this older housing stock, the sustainability, whether it's 10 acres or less. I do think also that I would support any efforts by those that are affected by Mr. Lake's clients, that they should make every effort, and a reasonable argument would stand with me to say, looking at parking situations and setbacks. So I think there's room for a lot more conversation, and I wouldn't stop it with this motion, but I think it really opens it up, and we can begin now to fix some things.
Thank you. Vice Mayor Jones?
As far as the code goes, this has been a long process, and I don't know how far from the end we are. In the interim, I think this is a very good move to improve some housing stock. I don't see a very large downside to this. I do want to promote that we get this included in the code, and I know we will, as we're working on many other things. But I don't see the resolution of that code coming real soon. And so I'm willing to move forward and support this motion.
Councilmember Summers?
I can count to four, so I'll make this brief, but I wanted to clarify some of my comments, too. As I thought about them sitting here, they didn't sound quite right, but I think the new product line that's coming out in both manufactured home and the RV are high-quality stuff. And what caught me to that, I have to make sure I say that properly, because what we were talking, when I talk about a higher quality housing stock, it's this morphing from a unit and then it becomes old and you add on to that, and that was the concern I have. Also, I'd like to mention just very quickly this difference between a comprehensive approach and incremental, and I certainly support any comprehensive reform better than incrementalism. But
I think in certain circumstances that comprehensive change doesn't work quite as well. Where it works really well is when you have a vacant parcel of land and we have the ability to impact that directly and immediately because the developer hasn't built on it yet. What we're talking about here is the is existing units, some of them, and particularly in the RV subdivisions, are already owned, and this provides an opportunity to begin to upgrade the housing stock in those types of units. And what I also like about this approach is that while it is incremental, maybe slow, I think it may start out slow, and as more people start to add units or improve their units, whether it's an improved RV or an improved manufactured home, we start to hit new standards, new guidelines in infrastructure development, in recreational amenities, and landscaping opportunities. And so that's again, why I'm supporting the measure. I said I was going to be brief. I lied.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, one point I want to stress that Councilmember Summers just said was that with this, when you come in for a special use permit for one of these more larger permanent things, the whole park has to upgrade. I mean, it's so that's why I look at it as not just we're putting in larger homes on RV lots, but that RV park now has to come up with more amenities to meet the needs of people that will be living there permanently. So we're actually upgrading the whole level of all these RV park subdivisions in the community. So that's why I also am in favor and made the motion on this.
Thank you. Any other comments? I have really wavered on this for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think we have to put it into context. This is not a specific zoning case we're voting on. This is to establish a framework, some standards by which special use permits on a case-by-case basis are measured and the guidelines. And I completely support the efforts and support what's been done, because I think that one of the ways that we do keep these RV parks and RV subdivisions from degrading is to allow them to upgrade with the times and with the market and with the new technology and the new building standards. I think I created a mess, though, because I think I would prefer it with the 950 square feet limitation. And on Thursday, I was thinking that that was purely a marketing issue. And I would not be in support of us creating artificial limitations that create a marketing advantage or disadvantage to any one party simply for the sake of creating that. As I look at it now, I wished that we would have gone ahead with the 950 simply because I think it addresses a land use issue, not a marketing issue. I think that by limiting it specifically in the RV parks to 950 square feet, you really codify that which exists right now, and it's close enough. And I think it also creates the type of land use separation that was intended as we came up with these four different zoning categories, which was to understand that there are different uses within what seems to be a homogenous type of activity. There are some very distinctive units. And I'm concerned that as we move forward, we've created a mishmash or the potential of a mishmash by not creating more of a well-defined limit, upward limit. So I sort of helped create this by raising questions on the 950, but I'm not going to be supporting it simply for that reason. I support the concept, and were the 950 in there, I would be voting for this. I believe that it probably should go forward with 950, but I can't support it at 1100, simply because I think it leaves too much room at the bottom end for that morphing or that mishmashing to happen. I think it would have been a more natural land use adjustment with this smaller limitation. So that being said, please vote. The vote is 4-3 with council members Richens, Kavanaugh, and the mayor voting no. The motion passes.
Thank you very much.
The next item on the agenda is item 9D. Councilmember Summers, before we go, I think you had something you want to say about that?
No, we can go ahead and let him.
Okay. 9D, which is zoning case Z08-47, the 8200-8500 blocks of East Baseline Road. And this is on the agenda as being referred back to the Planning and Zoning. Mr. Gilbert, Paul Gilbert, you asked to speak on this.
Thank you, Mayor and members of the Council. Paul Gilbert, 4800 North Scottsdale Road. I did ask to speak on this, and I feel quite strongly about it. This is a case that we have been working with the City of Mesa on for over 2 years. We finally got to the point where we worked out many of the technical problems, and we had a support, staff recommendation of support from your planning staff, and unanimous Planning Commission recommendation of support as it came forward to you. I would submit that it would be a draconian result to submit this back to the Planning Commission when a case is in this posture. But what makes it even more draconian is that we have been negotiating, and let me back up, one of the conditions for approval was that we were to negotiate a development agreement with the city. I have had 6 meetings with the city in attempting to negotiate this development agreement. Now, frankly, I think I've given more on this development agreement than I should have, but it's done, and there are only 2 issues remaining to work out on this development agreement. To send it back to the Planning Commission after 6 meetings, and not all of them have been with Councilman Summers, and I'm not criticizing Councilman Summers, believe it or not. I actually like him. But
you can still criticize him.
Yeah, that's right. But if it was to go back to the Planning Commission, it should have been done months and months ago instead of at the end of 6 negotiating sessions. And when we're down to 2 items that I can't work out or haven't been able to work out yet, to send it back to the Planning Commission is unfair and establishes a very dangerous precedent. If I did not have the unanimous support of the Planning Commission, it might be a different matter. I'm not oblivious to the fact that one member of the Planning Commission has asked to have it sent back down. Now, the rest have not. Furthermore, what good is achieved from sending it back down to the Planning Commission? The ostensible reason put forward for sending it back to the Planning Commission is that there's a little piece up in the corner that isn't part of this application. We don't own that piece. We don't control it. And the idea is, well, you need to coordinate with that little corner piece. Well, in fact, both this application and the application coming forward for the little corner piece are applications without a site plan. So everything that can be coordinated has been coordinated. The roads have been coordinated, the location of the roads, where they come in, how the two properties integrate together. One of the conditions that was not an official stipulation of the Planning Commission, but we were admonished strongly to have the two attorneys for the two parcels sit down together, and as obstreperous and difficult as Sean Lake is, I was able to sit down, and you know I'm just kidding. Sean and I were able to sit down and work through those details. And the concerns he had at the Planning Commission no longer exist, and we have worked those through. So what good does it do to send this application back down? Perhaps, there may be some merit in suggesting that when this comes back for site plan approval, and remember, we have to come back for you to approve the site plan on this case. So you get plenty of cracks at us. Then perhaps you should say, all right, let's coordinate the two site plans. But everything that can be coordinated in the posture that these two applications are in has been done. So if you say to me, well, we're going to always send this back to the Planning Commission, I sure would have liked to have known that 6 meetings ago. And if the reason you're sending it back to the Planning Commission is that the two parcels need to be coordinated, I should have been told that 6 meetings ago. But now, at the end of 6 meetings, suddenly and precipitously, It comes forward, well, we want to send it back to the Planning Commission. Now, I agree, Councilman Summers and I are two items in disagreement. Now, maybe we won't come to closure on that. I'm hoping we can. But if we can't, I should have my day in court, so to speak, to bring it before you and say, this is what we've agreed to in the development agreement. There's two things that we haven't, and you should hear it up or down. I should have that opportunity. Sending me back to the Planning Commission does no good. And for that reason, then, we would oppose sending this case back to the Planning Commission and request a two-week continuance. If Councilman Summers and I cannot work out the two remaining issues in the development agreement, then you have the option of sending it down or hearing the case. But to precipitously, at this juncture, after six meetings, to send it back down to the Planning Commission is unfair to me and unfair to my client, and would be a very draconian measure, in my opinion.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Gruber? Councilmember Richens.
I don't know if it's so much of a question as it is a statement. I think this is our seventh meeting as a council, so I apologize that, you know, I don't think we could have done anything six meetings ago that would have indicated this to you. I mean, we're just catching up with a lot of this stuff that's sure. been barreling down at us from months ago. I think well, part of the concept here in having reviewed site plans, having reviewed stuff that was proposed long ago, and I think really the concept here is a theme that our mayor constantly is talking about. It's building a better Mesa, better coordination between our developments, better communication between how people build things, better quality from our people that come and develop in Mesa. And frankly, some of the things that I've seen on your site plan aren't better quality, and I think Mesa expects better and demands better, and I think that's why we were elected now, is to be able to turn to you and to people who are developing in Mesa and say, it's time to raise the bar. It's time to build a better quality development in the city of Mesa. And I think that's why I'm supporting sending it back to planning and zoning at this time, because we need to have that communication coordination between your neighbors and between your developers so they understand what we're expecting out of you guys better. Thanks.
May I respond to that, Mayor?
Please, go ahead.
The Mayor and Councilman Richens. You tell me how sending this back to the Planning Commission is going to improve the quality. The quality will come from the design guidelines, which were stipulated to produce. The quality will come from the development agreement, which we've negotiated except for two items. We do not disagree with your basic predicate. We have made probably 20 major changes to the site plan to improve the quality, and maybe more. We're not in disagreement of improving the quality. That isn't the issue. And we want a good quality project. That's what we're trying to do. If I honestly felt you were accomplishing your goal of sending it back to the Planning Commission, then I'd say yes, but this is not a site plan case. We're not bringing the site plan forward now. So you don't, when you say, I looked at your site plan, I didn't like some of the things I've seen, that's not the site plan you're going to get. We have to come back and process a site plan, and if you don't like it, you can turn it down. Sending it back to the Planning Commission doesn't accomplish that.
Okay.
Ms., do you have another comment?
Well, I'm just going to say one of the things that I've seen in response to what you're saying, what it could accomplish, is what's happening at the end of the long road that goes to your development to the rear parcel. It doesn't seem like the transportation planning and is coordinated well with what's happening behind you. And I think that's an issue that needs to be worked out. So,
Mr. Wesley, if you could just explain very quickly the differences between sending it back to the P&Z and the ramifications of referring this case back to the P&Z versus a two-week continuance that both allows Mr. Gilbert to work with closing those gaps, and also, in essence, allows the other case, which is also going through a process, to somewhat catch up and bring the kind of consolidation. Could you explain those just briefly, what the differences are?
Mayor, I will try.
Okay. And we'll try to understand.
Both to be brief and to try to shed some light on it. It has been a difficult case all along because of the property divisions that are involved in trying to feel like we're getting a site plan that will meet the design and quality standards that we're after with the development of this property. It's an important piece. It's got the mixed-use residential development land use designation on it, and we have had direction to really work towards that employment uses happening because we need the jobs in Mesa. We heard the discussion before. The way we're seeing this evolve, it's getting more residential on the property than what we had previously envisioned and what the general plan calls for, and is necessitating a general plan amendment because of that. As we looked at this site, staff made every effort we could in working with the applicant to craft a number of stipulations to run with this, to try to address that problem the best we could, to provide means of access and circulation that will provide the opportunity for more than just residential to occur on the piece that's missing. But without really being able to look at both sites at the same time and have Planning and Zoning Board discuss those issues with both applicants in the room at the same time with one case, they were somewhat limited in how they could look at and approach and see what the options might be. So by sending it back, it does give them that opportunity to really think through those, work with both applicants at the same time. As Mr. Gilbert has pointed out, because we don't have an actual site plan on either property at this time, we are somewhat limited in that. It would be much easier to do if we actually were looking at specific site plans. They can get a lot more specific about how those would be at this point, unless it's required that site plans accompany the zonings. We will still be somewhat limited in that, and just talking about case stipulations and design guidelines for the future. So again, it's not a very short answer. I'm not sure I cleared things up too much, but there are a number of issues and questions about how those land uses can occur to meet the current general plan. Planning and Zoning Board could spend a little bit more time on
question
it.
I have is the general plan, since these, when the general plan, I guess it doesn't really matter, the general plan of the mixed use limits or defines a mix between residential and others, and what is it, 30%?
Correct, Mayor, a maximum 30% at a minimum 15 units per acre.
Is that applied to the entire area? Or could, for example, the one parcel eat up all the 30% and then not have it apply to the other parcel? Or how does that work realistically?
Mayor, how we've done it is applied to each parcel individually. Since they're separately owned, each parcel could have 30%.
30%. Okay. Right. So if you add the two together, you'd assume that the 30%
overall
is still clear. Okay. So this Mr. Gilbert's parcel can't take up all the residential.
Correct.
But it allows for 30%, up to 30%. And what you're saying is, the what's been proposed is within that 30%.
On right? Mr. Gilbert's, that's true. On the other parcel, coming in separately, they're proposing a minor plan amendment to change it all to residential.
Okay. And what would keep that from being put into context, since Mr. Gilbert's plan is coming through before, of the overall plan with the first parcel?
Mayor, the goal has been to try to maintain the existing general plan and keep that greater mix of uses. And there, we feel like there would be a better opportunity to look at how we can accomplish meeting the current general plan if we can discuss the design concepts with both applicants.
Okay, because the problem you have is that since that one piece of property is to the back of the property, to throw a 30% on that, they really, because of the layout of the land, really the second parcel is the one that has the biggest problem, as I'm hearing you, because, you know, it may make more sense from a land use standpoint for them to have more than 30%. And then that might then throw the entire thing out of balance, is what you're saying.
Correct. And we may end up at that same place of residential is the best use on that back piece when we look at it. But we feel like we get a better opportunity to look at those options and maintain the current general plan, keep more jobs happening if we can really discuss them at the same time.
Okay. Councilmember Summers, did you have a comment or question?
I do. Where to start? First of all, we have had quite a few meetings, Paul, and I really appreciate I think we worked very well together in trying to come up with something on this site that worked all the way around. Mm-hmm. Now, your job, of course, to advocate for your client. Mine is to look at it from the perspective of how well does this work in the city, how well does this integrate, and what are the ramifications? We talk about unintended consequences here just a little bit ago. What are the consequences of some of this? John, do we have a map we could throw up on the Elmo so people in the audience can see what we're talking about and people at home can see what we're talking about? Forgive me if I don't sound very rehearsed, but let me... Could we get that right side up? Because it's just going to make me nauseous to try to look at that sideways.
You're just being funny
time.
Now, right?
One more time.
The other way. Keep going.
You got to go.
North is north. A little more, a little more. Hey! You're just being funny. Okay. For all those that playing the home game, I think, is their favorite term now, and for those of us who are those in the audience, this is the piece that was just pointed to is the parcel. Jack, can I borrow your pencil for a moment as I talk to her? You got it. Thank you, sir. You notice that the whole parcel has little, I guess they'd be triangles on it. What that indicates is that this piece is in the general plan, the voter-approved general plan, for mixed-use
residential,
which is what, John, 30% residential?
Right. Mayor, Councilmember Summers, allows up to a maximum of 30%. Could be all employment, but up to 30%. Could be residential, okay. Minimum 15 dwelling units per acre.
And while I've been working on this case for a good, three months? This first time I ever saw this piece of property and somebody come forward to me was 2 years ago when there was an attempt by the owner of that, what's called the out parcel. It's the parcel that is not highlighted in the dark. It's the upper corner by the U.S. 60 and the Santan Parkway. Owner ended up selling off the parcel, and because of various reasons, there were some court battles back and forth. We won't get into the detail of that, but it was broken into these pieces, and I think the judge, in his or her infinite wisdom, broke it into a very unique piece. You notice the front part is the large square. On the bottom of that is C2, which is commercial use. It captures all the commercial uses, shopping centers, that type of thing that you would look at. The back part of that is PEP, which stands for what? Planned Employment Park. The ideal here is to put some office. Then you notice that little square in the back that's not highlighted looks more like an L. That's where neither of these parcels has access to the back without the permission of the other. I can only assume that the judge did that in breaking up this parcel. So the back side is intended to be a residential use. Now the question is, how will this develop over time? All of the C2 uses, if we're going to go with each individual parcel being mixed use residential, this site strictly meets it because they have some C2, they have some office designated in the back. Skip to the back, there is commercials, apartments. The problem is, in why you would say, well, why don't we hear both of these cases separately? Because they are separate in a way in that they're two different owners. It's because what happens, if you notice on this site, the other property owner has absolutely no access to baseline except through this particular parcel. And when you zone this in a certain way, it's going to impact the way that back property is utilized. So if we as a governing body, if we as a city say that, we should have in this site, we should stay with the general plan and have 30% residential and the remaining of that, because I'm not going to do the math right now, the remaining of that being the commercial uses, the trouble is how do you get 70% of that back parcel to be anything but residential? And how do you, if you're going to squeeze residential in that 30%, how are you going to do that? Are they separate parcels and separate owners? They are. But they're linked in that the properties only have the access off of baseline. There's no other access. There are freeways north and south on this. So there's concern. The other concern here is, let's say we go with R4 in that back parcel, and maybe we do determine that the other parcel should be residential. We're looking at the potential on this site of up to 1,000 apartments between what's highlighted on there, and you took it off, what's highlighted there and what the next case will be. 1,000 apartments. You have to move that traffic in and out. Also, we could be looking at a development over time. How well does this integrate How well do these things mix together? Will it be a livable, sustainable, and walkable community? Are we really encouraging the type of growth here that's going to work? Another piece that concerns me is if you look at the bottom part on baseline toward baseline road, again, you have C2 uses. Glimpse Property is a C2 commercial developer. They are not an office developer, so they're not going to develop PEP. They are not a residential developer. We don't have office or residential users right here. As a matter of fact, that is in our July 17, 2008 planning notes. If you thought this was going to be short, I apologize. You should know me better than that by now. So what we had is a mix of properties, and it's a struggle. How well is this does it develop? And here's just one scenario. C2 develops out, or at least a portion of it, and then the residential gets sold. Although right now, I'll tell you, the market's down about 17% on residential properties, but apartments get built here. What kind of apartments? Mark Taylor apartments, or, well, I'll leave the imagination to you. That's something that's one of the sticking points and one of the things that we've been working on. I think that we have, admittedly, being in positive direction. But you'll have 1,000 apartments here. How are they going to move through the property? But also the PEP, something that was said at the board meeting, if I can find my notes, was that, quite frankly, that the parcels, that the retail and the family portions work well and that the office portion isn't ready to be developed, noting that if it doesn't work, they will come back and ask for a minor general plan amendment to change it. So let's play that out. Your site R4 is developed out as apartments. You get another 500 apartments, just rounding the figure, on the parcel that is not highlighted, the part that's called C2 on the bottom. Can we throw that back up so people can see what I'm talking about? C2 on the bottom of the large square is developed out, and you have this PEP that sits vacant for, I don't know, how long? Question is, how well does this integrate? A few questions were asked directly, and I'm heading on the downhill slope here. A few statements that were made. One is whether to go back to P&Z, we should have done it months and months ago. When this was back months and months ago on July 17th, it was stated by at least three different board members that they had concerns about the site, and as it was stated, had the recommended that if the other zoning case, this outparcel case, the one that's not highlighted, if the other zoning case were further along, a continuance might be in order to see them both together. And that was stated by quite a few folks. It was stated that there was unanimous support on P&Z. I should also note that on Thursday we made the recommendation to change this to send it back to planning and zoning. That afternoon at 4 o'clock, Planning and Zoning had a meeting and unanimously approved continuing the outparcel case, or the case that's not highlighted, in order to see them together because they thought it was that important. The other issue in the last conversation we had, Paul, was by phone as we were making our arguments back and forth between these cases is we came to a bit of an impasse. And I had indicated at the time, to be all honest, that perhaps I should ask for a continuance to a point where this board could see both of these cases together. And that's a possibility. But in retrospect, after considering that particular option, we're turning the city council into a planning and zoning board. We don't study all of these cases to the scrutiny or level that planning and zoning does. And quite frankly, planning and zoning is really where these cases should be vetted out, forwarded to the council, and then if there are other issues to work on, we can do that. We've sent cases back before. I regret that I think I'm the only one that keeps doing this. I apologize to my attorney friends just the littlest bit. But we have sent these back before. So to conclude, and I may come back to speak to you in a shorter, I think this needs to go back to P&Z. It needs to look at integration. We need to look at the conformance of the general plan. We need to have P&Z look at the general plan, at both parcels,
and determine is that outparcel affected negatively and really shoved into a box and being more apartments? Do we really want to have 1,000 apartments here? How sustainable is that? How integrated is that? And he's right. This doesn't have a site plan. We have no idea what this is going to look like. So for those reasons, and I think I'm going to stop now, that is why I've come to the recommendation that we send this back to PNC. I think that's where this case should be vetted, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Summers. Councilmember Higgins.
I trust eventually I'll get a chance to respond to
that. Yes, you will.
I really do have a short concept.
Oh, we've heard that before.
No. Councilmember Richin's Building a Better Mesa comment was just excellent. And this is a big parcel. And to say that the tiny parcel off back is misleading because it's about a quarter of the overall acreage-ish. So this really is a big component of this overall site. And the site, I'm guessing, is about 70 acres in total. And this is an ideal situation where we could actually start building one of our communities that we're looking at, one where people can work and they can shop and they can live and they can actually all walk around the site all together. This is the ideal parcel, and it's zoned where we could do something great like that. And I would just really like to see something.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? I'd like to ask a question because, you know, without getting into the merits of the case, because that's not what we're here to decide tonight. We're either here to decide to send it back or
correct
or to continue it. Right. I guess I'm a little troubled by this whole process. I mean, it's not as if from day one we didn't know that we had this situation.
Exactly.
And I guess as we talk about consolidating cases, I'm a little confused as to why they weren't at least from our side basically consolidated to begin with in this. And I know there may not have been a formal application, but to me, I guess I'm just confused. I mean, part of building a better Mesa is creating an environment where things can flow through a process easier. And I don't know exactly what went on, so I'm not criticizing. I'm just asking a question because I'm really not understanding how we got to where we're disjointed and why it would hurt to not sit on this for a couple of weeks to just figure out how we can join them in a way that facilitates both of our plans, because I'm a little confused as to why that wasn't done a long time ago. And maybe Mr. Wesley, I'm putting you on the spot, and I apologize for that. But I'm just a basic question.
Mayor, council members, I'll give my response. Again, I think Mr. Gilbert might be able to provide some further insights to that. But from the very first time it came in to planning staff, we suggested that they should be seen together because of the access issues that have been pointed out. The parcel that's left out has no access to baseline. The very back corner of Mr. Gilbert's parcel has no access without going through the other piece, and we felt like it all could certainly work better if it were brought in. On the other hand, we did have this case that was before us. They'd met the submission requirements. They had their items that met the requirements for processing. The other applicant, while they'd come in for a pre-submittal, was not ready to move forward. So in fairness to Mr. Gilbert and his client, who was ready to move forward, we felt like we needed to go ahead and take it through the process. Initially to the Planning and Zoning Board, in fact, up at the very last minute, we thought we were going to be recommending continuance for several reasons. One, again, was to try to work with the other property owner. The other reasons dealt largely with the access issues. We ended up being able to resolve those, again, largely through the long list of stipulations and the idea of the development agreement. And so that did get us to the Planning and Zoning Board and to their recommendation at that time.
Well, but it doesn't sound like we've resolved those, because it sounds like we want to go back and redo that. So I guess that's what's confusing to me.
Sure. One of the things we tried to do with the stipulations was set up the condition so that back parcel would not have to be all residential. Now it's going ahead and coming forward with a request for all residential, so we must not have accomplished everything we wanted to with the conditions we set on this case if they have not been able to see that they have other options.
Okay. Councilmember Somerset,
I think you hit a good point, Mayor. Why should we go back to P&Z months and months ago? Is the other case wasn't ready. And quite frankly, what I would have preferred to see is that both these cases come forward simultaneously so P&Z and City Council and staff could look at them together. I would have preferred that they had a site plan as well, and we could look at how that site plan and how the uses are integrated. We don't have a site plan on either one of them. My fear is that it was a rush. Like I stated in the very beginning, if you can remember back about 3 days ago when I started my comments, this was one parcel at one point and then split into two users. And those two users are coming forward with different plans, but the fact still remains, I think, that what happens to this plan impacts that back parcel. And if I can form this in a question to end it, John, quite frankly, the planning staff at this point would prefer to see both of these cases now that they're simultaneous. Because 3 months ago, the other case wasn't on the radar screen. Like I said earlier, now both cases are coming to P&Z next month. So we have the opportunity to send this back and have both cases
seen
next month.
Let me ask you this. Practically, we'll get to you, Mr. Gilbert. Don't worry.
Is that right? I think
Let me ask you a question. Difference as far as the cases catching up between going back to P&Z. I'm assuming if we go back to P&Z, in many ways, we're opening the book back up. Whereas if we continue, what we're saying is that we're going to leave it as is. However, we have, I guess we don't have a whole lot of leeway because you have an approved zoning case that's out of P&Z. So you only have so much you can do with maybe the development agreement or other things. What do you anticipate by opening up the book would create more than just continuing this and allowing the other one to catch up?
Mayor, it is going to be difficult to continue to try to get the two property owners at just a zoning stage to come up with something that we necessarily feel is better. But it does give the opportunity. We've heard the discussion of council this evening, further emphasis on the integration of the uses, providing for that more mix of a development, the building the better Mesa concept. To get something significantly different, we may have to look at a different zoning pattern on Mr. Gilbert's property. We may have to look at some of the stipulations that were placed on the property that continue to provide better access to that rear piece. And one of the limiting factors to this has been that main road that comes in, the Haas Road extension north of Baseline, and where that's placed on the property, it creates some of that limit. That's come about, as I understand, through part of the previous court cases, but hope, you know, there may be some possibility to move that if we've got the property owners working together. Those are some of the issues we'll have to try to work out and see if we can't come up with a better solution.
Mr. Gilbert, can you quit?
Yeah, I preface my comments, and if this seems harsh, Councilman Summers, I got to tell you I'm hot under the collar, so I'm just going to get it off my chest. Had you told me 6 meetings ago that you wanted to send it back to the Planning Commission and that was your intent all along, I wish you had said so, because you wasted my time and yours in 6 meetings trying to negotiate a development agreement. So, you know, that's a very awkward situation for us to be in. But let me go through a couple of other points. We meet the general plan. There may have been some confusion on that. We purposefully laid out our plan, so we met the general plan. These are two separate parcels. What if that property owner decided that he didn't want to develop his property now? Would we have to wait until that property owner suddenly decided, well, I'm going to develop my property now, so you've held our 70-acre parcel in captivity until that property owner decides to develop his property? That's not fair. I don't think it's legal. Going forward, we are entitled to come forward with a zoning case without a site plan. That's your ordinance. So that's what we're doing. That's what the other parcel is doing. We thought that was a more honest approach because we didn't have all our users put together. In the meantime, we have gone through and have several users in place. You talk about a better quality Mesa. This is a skipped over piece of property. It has very poor access, and it hasn't been developed for a long period of time. There's a reason why, and that's because it's a difficult and awkward piece of property. We actually now have some users that are ready to come forward. Unlike the other parcel, which does not have any users at present, we actually have users. So we're in a position to go forward. The other parcel is not. Secondly, since the other parcel doesn't have a site plan, what benefit is there? And this sounds like a broken record. I apologize, but I think it's a very salient fact. What is gained by sending it back down? It doesn't have a site plan. We don't have a site plan. So you say, or your staff says, well, we can coordinate the two. That's what the stipulations are designed to do. First of all, Councilman Summers' point is, yes, there is no access to that back parcel except through our parcel. That's why there is a court-ordered mandate putting the road in. So that road is set by the courts. It's there. The staff said, we're not sure that that's going to be enough, so we want you to put another roadway in. We've agreed to that. So the access is taken care of. Furthermore, we met with Sean Lake and worked out where that road would go. We're in full agreement. So access is settled. That's one of the few things that can be coordinated when these two parcels don't have a site plan. The question was raised, well, what kind of apartments? Well, they don't have a user. We don't have a user for apartments. So what we did is we said we would agree to a series of design guidelines and that limit what can be built there by way of apartments. We're stipulated to do that. We're willing to do that. The point is about the issues that can be vented at P&Z. They were vented. Without a site plan, there's nothing more to vent. Neither side has a site plan. And then lastly, when one talks about a better Mesa, we went around to the neighborhood and interviewed various neighbors in connection with this case. Their plea was, that's been vacant long enough. We don't have enough commercial and retail services here. Please hurry and bring them. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. And we're not sacrificing the quality. Absolutely not. If you read what we're agreeing to in this development agreement, the quality is overwhelming. There has never been a similar piece of property that has agreed to the quality standards that we have. We're down to two issues. Other than that, everything Councilman Summers has asked us to do, we've done.
Mr. Wesley, let me ask you this. We talk about what is to be lost if we sit on this thing for 2 weeks, as Mr. Gilbert requested, in your view. I mean, do we lose a bunch? Do you think that...
Mayor, as opposed to sending it back?
Yeah. If we just continue it and allow for whatever. I mean, you have, in essence, a zoning case in front of you. You know what the other parcel is proposing. It would seem like to me like you can either take what's existing and see if that fits in with what's sitting there. And if it doesn't, as Mr. Gilbert said, then you can combine them. Am I missing something? Or if I am, please tell me.
Mayor, I believe that's correct. In 2 weeks, I guess the goal would be to finalize the development agreement. So then the council gets to see those stipulations as well as the stipulations in the zoning case and determine from your perspective if through those you're achieving the best possible set of guidelines for development of this property that can achieve the same thing that we might get from sending it back or not. And I believe I heard that if at that point you're still not satisfied, that maybe it could go back.
Well, I think I heard Mr. Gilbert offer that up. And the other thing is that the other party now knows what they're dealing with, and it would seem like
probably
P&Z could hear that knowing what's sitting on the table.
Correct.
If that helps to accomplish our purposes.
At this point, Mayor, if the decision were made to send it back, there's a possibility of being able to have a substantive discussion at the October P&Z meeting on October 16th. If you wait till the 6th of October and at that point decide to send it back, we're probably off till November to be able to have a substantive discussion at P&Z.
I mean, I appreciate the delays and everything, but we're talking about something that's going to have a 30, 40, 50-year impact on us, and I certainly would rather get it right than rush to judgment on either thing and then regret what we did 5-10 years down the road. So, Councilmember Summers, you have another comment?
I think that last comment is key and why I would support sending that back, because now instead of having 7 people look at it, we have the opportunity of 14. It should also be noted that
Reese Anderson of Pewin Lake had been at the P&Z meeting on July 19th and asked for a 60-day continuance. And my contact with them is that would prefer to have had these two cases both heard in planning. 6 meetings ago, I had no idea that the other case was going to catch up. Quite frankly, we had moved forward, there are still some unresolved issues that even, I'm afraid, the stipulations won't even be able to get to. And I go back to that comment. It was either hold it up here and let the entire council look at it or send it back. And I always think it's best that we utilize that planning and zoning, give them the opportunity that they had asked for hoped for on July 17th but wasn't available, and now have here in less than 30 days.
Councilmember Finter.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the tone that I'm hearing from you as to see if there's some sort of way to work towards this 2 weeks. I'll be very careful how I say this. P&Z had a shot at it. They took a good look with the information they had. The case moves on. Having spent years on P&Z, I understand that. I don't think we should penalize this gentleman or his clients and send it back. If there were substantive changes to the stipulations or what was agreed to at P&Z, I would say quickly, let's get it back and have that process. They've had their bite. They will also have a good look at it as a site plan review. And I think that's, Mr. Gilbert makes a good point, that's where a lot of these details will be worked out. I think it's better to, if anything, it sounds like there's a lot of work on the development plan. Have it worked out here, holding council, continuance, whatever, let the other one catch up. I don't think it's anybody's fault it's happened like this, but it is what it is, and I don't think we should penalize the applicant for some miscommunications or information not being there. So I would support what I think the mayor is trying to get to is a compromise of at least a couple of weeks to see if we can't get things moving this direction and not back. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Councilmember Higgins.
Well, I'm in favor of making a motion to approve the item as it's written in our agenda, which would be to send it back to planning and zoning. So I'm making that motion. I push the button.
We have a motion, by Councilmember Higgins, and we have a second by
Councilmember Summers. So what we will be voting on is not the zoning case, but simply whether to send it back to P&Z. And if this approves it, we'll go back to P&Z. If it does not, then we'll have to deal with the issue of the continuance, because I guess we would then vote on that's the item on the agenda. So we would, by nature, would be continued. Would be vote on the case itself.
No, Mayor, you cannot vote on the case itself tonight.
Okay, so it would not go back. So by default, it continues.
That's right.
You would have to set a specific date.
We'd have to set a specific date.
Yes, okay, you would need another motion.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Higgins, a second by Councilmember Summers. Is there any other discussion? Just one thing. I would agree with Councilmember Finter. I think I don't see what we really accomplished by sending this back to P&Z right now. They've looked at it. I believe a continuance would not harm anybody other than we might get a solution, we might get a resolution, we might get the properties to work together under that guideline, understanding that on the 6th, we would have an up or down type of a situation.
Sure.
And I would be in favor of doing that. I'm going to be voting against this simply because I think it deserves another 2 weeks to see if we can work it out and perhaps get the parties together and the staff together to see if we can come up with something, because this is a unique situation. This is a very strange property because of its configuration, because of its history, and because of some of the challenges. I think many of the problems that we're having, that we're talking about, will work out for themselves. I mean, we talk about the number of apartment units. I think that sheer physical restraints and market restraints will keep those down. I mean, we can't put in thousands and thousands simply because there's no way to get people in and out of that. And I think that we can let that play out. So I will be voting in opposition. Vice Mayor.
I'm willing to run the extra 2 weeks, and knowing that you've had a series of meetings and haven't been able to resolve some of them, and you're kind of taking a gamble to prolong the process even more by by going 2 weeks, but I'm willing to give you that option because I think you deserve to have that chance, another shot at it. So I will be voting against the motion.
All right. There's no further discussion. Please vote. The vote is 4-3 in the affirmative with Council Member Finter, Vice Mayor Jones, and Mayor Smith voting nay. The motion carries. The case is submitted back to planning and zoning. Okay. Next item on the agenda, items from citizens present. We have one request. Mark Yarborough.
My name is Mark Yarborough. I reside at 2427 South Spruce Street in Mesa. It's great to see some familiar faces and friends here. So I'm going to be speaking about the Rhodes Pool situation that occurred. I have talked to a couple of you, and I do understand the reasoning behind it. I kind of want to bring some additional information. The reason that the Wave Rider amenity was chosen is because of the close proximity to the Chandler Park that's right there. It is a large park, has three different water slides, and our thought process was just putting one water slide at Rhodes isn't going to draw people from it. I can tell you, living in District 3, we drive to Desert Oasis in Chandler. That's where my kids go on the slides at, and it's a great park, a great facility. We've visited the new facility that was built at Carson Junior High School, and it does have one slide. It would be similar to what's built, and my kids haven't went back. I mean, Desert Oasis by far just outdoes it just from the sheer amenities and the cost that they put into it. I kind of gave you a handout that explains some of it briefly. I know cost was a consideration, and is that park disproportional to, you know, the other things that are built? It's not. Right now, Keno, we're building that pool. It's a $9 million pool. It's $2 million more than what Rhodes is projected to be at. You have Skyline, it's nearly $10 million when it's going to be built out. Carson, which was built almost 3 years ago, was $5.1 million. So as far as a cost, you know, is that costing more? No, it's not. It's in line or below what the other facilities are. The other item, I'm proud to say that the folks in District 3 have always supported Mesa. We've always voted, you know, in favor of what we can, and with a critical bond package coming up, I think it would be a mistake to say, you know, we're going to pull back this, you know, we're going to give you an amenity. That's great. We appreciate that. But we want an amenity that's different to the ones that are close by. The Chandler Park and Rhodes are 3 miles apart, less than 3 miles. So it's, you know, you're not going to drive a bunch of people there when there's an amenity that's, you know, right at the border of the city of Chandler that's as good or better than the one that we're building. And I kind of included some attachments so you can see the Chandler one and everything else. I want to say that I've heard from kids on the baseball field, they're already planning on who's going to fall off the Wave Rider first. They're making bets, and I have news for them. My kids have been on one in California. They're all going to fall off quick. None of them are going to survive. So I would just ask you to consider it. If you decide not to, you know, we're still supportive of Mesa. You know, we're still friends. We still support the council. But we would ask you to expedite it. If you're going to put just a slide, make the decision and go ahead and do that so we can get the construction wrapped up. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Yarborough. We have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Vice Mayor, second by Councilmember Richens. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.